From Studio 22, you're listening to ServeCast with your host, William Lamb. ServeCast is dedicated to challenging those who have a desire to serve, lead, and make the world a better place through the love of Jesus Christ. And now, here's William.
Welcome back to ServeCast. We're glad you're listening to us today. This is William Lamb, your host. I'm here at the Lee University campus in Studio 22. My guest today is Pastor Paul Dyer. He'll be with us momentarily. We'll talk about faith, leadership, and service. Don't go away. We'll talk to you right back in just a minute. Hey, Paul, welcome to Studio 22. We are glad you are with us. Now, Paul Dyer is a Lee alum. His wife, Kim's a Lee alum. And his four children. And so when you're listening to this, Paul was on campus and we were recording while he was here. His daughter Anna was at Summer Honors at Lee University, and your sons, two of your boys, which ones were here?
Eli and Jaden.
They were in soccer camp?
Soccer camp.
And you were here on official church business, but today we're here just to talk about faith, leadership, and service, right?
Absolutely.
Welcome, Paul. We're glad you're here, man.
Great to be here, William. Thank you so much for allowing me this opportunity.
You got it. So talk a little bit about you and Kim, and you know, in this whole first segment, these 15 minutes, we're going to talk about faith. Now, the reason I invited Paul to this interview is because he previously had spent how many, eight years in missions in the country of
Honduras.
All right. And so just kind of tell us about you and Kim and kind of where you are now, what you're doing these days, and what's going on in life.
All right. Privilege. We actually live in Loretta, Tennessee, in Lawrence County. I pastor Busby Church of God. It's been a joy coming into a small community after living outside the country for 8 years. We are bringing a service model to a small community, and God just opened up many doors for us to be in the school system. We now have we are able to be in 6 schools. And we have 20 churches on our board, and we've started a program that we didn't actually initially start it, but we've started it in our county, and it's called Give a Kid a Chance. And so we're able to offer a backpack with supplies, new shoes, haircuts. We do a medical exam, a dental exam, eye exam. We give them a Bible. We actually do a service. And then we feed them that day. We have bouncy houses. It's just a huge serve day for the kids, and it's been really exciting.
So now, a lot of what you're doing, I know because I've traveled to Honduras for several years to be involved with you in leading students from Lee University there, but a lot of what you're doing here, you were already doing there. So tell us how you and Kim, go back all the way back to the beginning. I think it's kind of very interesting for the whole faith journey that Kim is your wife. You know, that's kind of a wonderful, wonderful
yes.
addition for you. But let's talk about, you know, how you guys met at the Lee University campus, and then big challenge ahead, man. Let's move to Honduras. Let's just move to Honduras and start our family there. Take us back and lead us into that for just a few minutes.
Well, just even before that, my parents traveled a lot when I was a kid and brought back coins from various countries. And I didn't realize then that the coins were seeds in my life that opened a window. Though I'd never traveled outside the country, they were seeds that opened a window for me to dream, you know, to have visions of what God was going to do. And so when the call of God came in my life, it was unique because it wasn't crying, oh, I've got to preach. It wasn't crying, oh, God, what am I going to do? It was, Lord, I don't want to go to Africa. I don't want to go. And so at that moment when I said, Lord, I'll go wherever you want me to go, is when the greatest peace of God came on me. So did I know that would be missions immediately? I didn't know, but it was amazing that from the very beginning, God was directing my life into missions. So Kim and I met here at Lee University. She was a 4-year scholar athlete.
On soccer player.
Team, yeah. She's still coaching today now that we were back in. And we got married. We were working in a – we were pastoring in Maryville, Tennessee. And I had been going on several missions trips. And one of the trips I was at, I was in Honduras. And how that came about is we actually went to a revival, and I was making plans to go on a trip to the Philippines. And as I was looking at the map at the back of this church, a lady walks up to me, and I was pointing at Honduras, and she says, God is about to open a door for you there that no man can shut.
Wow.
And it's like it blew me away. I was like, oh, wow. And I told Kim about it. And so I went to Honduras. While I was in Honduras, I called her and said, honey, you know, I really feel like this is where we're supposed to be. And I said, how do you feel about moving to Honduras? And she says, as long as I'm with you, it doesn't matter where we go.
Now, how long were you married at this point?
6 years.
Wow.
Yeah. So, anyway, we that was in a July, January the next year. So, basically 6 months later, we actually moved.
Mm-hmm.
I resigned the church in September, and we moved in January to Honduras with four children. My youngest was 18 months, so it was. Everybody said, "You're crazy. Why would you do something like that?" But you know, when God calls,
mm-hmm.
you just can't deny that fact.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it was amazing how everything lined up. God just began opening door after door. I came back from Honduras and immediately was invited to a mission orientation. From that orientation, within a matter of months, mm-hmm. I was appointed as a career missionary. The funds, God just opened doors for funds. And throughout our whole time in missions, we never had an account in red. God just continually blessed.
Mm-hmm. So what do you attribute to your faith journey as that, or how do you speak from the idea of your faith that would give you enough of confidence to make that move, I guess is the word I'm looking for, Paul, because, you know, everybody, faith is basically, you know, trust is a risk survived, and we express our faith to God and our faith in God, and then, you know, he gives us opportunity, and we take those opportunity, but there's still a lot of risk involved in that. What gave you enough of confidence? I mean, you say, okay, you know, God assured my heart that I'm supposed to do that. For those listeners who might not understand what that really means, how do you get to a place in your own life where you can really say, you know, God, I'm willing to make this step. I'm confident in making that. What do you have to have in your relationship with God to get to that place?
Man, that's a good question.
It's a great question, and you know, and I ask that question not to pin you, but I ask that question because I know your heart and I know your genuineness, and I think a lot of people grapple with this idea of, how do you follow God, you know, when you know he's saying something, but yet it looks so uncertain, but yet now that I did that for 8 years, he proved so faithful. How do you teach that idea of thinking to someone?
Well, first of all, I don't know if it's the way I was raised. It was instilled in me from the very beginning, always trust God.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always even taught my kids, you know, you do everything you can and you trust God for the rest. And I don't know. I mean, I don't know if it's a certain personality or what, but God just really, I feel like the Lord's given me that gift of faith,
mm-hmm.
that I've never really worried about, is God going to take care of me? And the other side is, you know, I've always looked at life as not, you know, I'll be faithful if I have.
Mm-hmm.
It's always, God, you'll take me where I need to be.
Mm.
And if it means that I don't have something, then it's where you want me to be. And I just trust him that he will take care of that. And he always has. You know, has there been moments that we didn't have? Absolutely. But at that moment, I'm not worried. I know God's going to take care of it. And, I mean, from opening a Bible one time that was in my car and needing a certain amount of money, and all of a sudden I open my Bible and that exact amount of money is in my Bible, and nobody knows. So God's always proven faithful. And I think sometimes it's the stepping into the water. You know, the Israelites were told to cross the water, but the water didn't move until somebody stepped in it. And I believe that, you know, when God calls us to be faithful, it's faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. So in other words, we may not see the water parting until we step in it. And I think that, that's where God has really helped me to walk, is to go ahead. If he's calling it, step in it, he will make a way.
So you went to Honduras, and, Jaden was 18 months.
Yes.
And now he's how old?
He is 11 years old.
11? Okay. Eli's how old?
13.
Anna?
Anna's 19.
And then Wesley?
Wesley's actually 16. He falls between,
Wow. So your kids grew up, basically, on a mission field.
Oh, yeah.
They grew up on a mission field. What is that like as a parent, watching your kids? Obviously, you know, they're bilingual, you know, they're great in languages, and very wise kids and very mature. But what does it look like to see your kids develop in a dream that the God gave you, but yet not sure that your kids were going to make it, but knowing your kids, they did make it? What was it like watching your kids grow up in this mission field?
Well, you know, you have to realize that no matter how faithful or how much faith you have, there's always a wonder in you. And so I've asked myself throughout those years, God, am I messing these kids up? Am I doing the right thing? But, you know, just in March, sitting down with Wesley, hearing him talk to a group of students and saying, thank you, Dad, for bringing us to Honduras. You have shaped us. You have molded us. You know, brought tears to my eyes because I realized that it was the best thing that could ever happen, because it gelled us as a family. It gave them a cultural mentality that when they come back here, they're not this or that. They're very adaptable to their environments, and they're super kids, and I'm not really trying to be biased. They're just, thank God.
Well, it's true. I know them, and you are telling the truth, and so that's very good. Okay, so just a couple of minutes left in this particular segment, but as we talk about this idea of faith, you know, how was your faith strengthened or challenged when you were on the mission field?
Oh, wow. You know some of our stories.
Yeah.
You know, from 2 months in, we were broke into. My kids had just been put into a school. My wife was by herself, and some guys come in and broke into our home. And in that moment, you know, she unscrewed the light bulb, went into a closet, hid under some luggage, and God hid her. And through that experience, you know, she recalls the fact that sitting under those luggage, God just began to revealed her scripture, giving her peace. And we've had multiple moments like that, that the Lord has just lifted us and showed us his faithfulness. And so my faith has been challenged through those moments, but at the same time, we've been strengthened even more so. So to today, you know, we just completely surrender to him for whatever his plan is.
What's a scripture that kind of is a mantra of sorts for your family that has held you guys tight through this journey?
Well, you know, at that moment, for example, when Kim was in that closet, you know, a scripture that came to her mind was, look unto the hills from whence your help comes from. And it's always been that way. We know that we can look to him because he is always faithful.
A lot of uncertainties in our world today. A lot of uncertainties for those of us who actually live here in the, you know, in the States in America, and then those who live in Central America or any of the other continents around the globe. You know, this is a chaotic world in which you're living in. What would you say to that student, or that, you know, somebody may not be a student, maybe already out of school, or maybe school wasn't their option or wasn't their choice, you know, but yet they're feeling this tug to be missional. What do you say to them?
Look, don't ever not serve or get in. You know, I tell people in messages, I heard this a long time ago, don't remember where I heard it, but I said, missions is not crossing the seas, but missions is seeing the cross. You know, when Jesus said, he says, deny yourself, take up your cross, and follow me. If you will be a disciple, you will be missional, because it is the heart of Christ. Mm. And so, you know, missional is just being a disciple, because you will serve.
Good stuff. Hey, stay with us. We'll take a brief pause, and we'll be right back, and we'll talk about leadership. You don't want to miss this next segment, because we're going to talk about the work that Paul and Kim and their family was doing in Honduras, and the school, and all that's exciting that's going on over there. We'll be right back. And we're back with my guest, Paul Dyer. We're going to talk about leadership. Now, Paul, you guys spent 8 years in Honduras, and during that time, take us through, instead of me trying to name it all, okay, take us through to what God developed as part of his kingdom work in Honduras, and what God, now you're still, even though you're pastoring in Lawrence County, even though you're pastoring in Loretta, Tennessee, you're still actively involved in leadership and ministry in Honduras. So take us back to whenever you and Kim were there, and kind of what some of the, you know, there's a clinic there, there's a school there. Let's talk about that. What did God develop through you guys over the time?
When I went to Honduras, I actually went as a missionary to the deaf. Mm. I had a friend of ours, a couple, Kurt and Cheryl Humphreys, had invited us to come down and me to look at their ministry, not realizing that I would be connected to. Mm-hmm. And so within the first 8 months of us moving there, we actually, Kurt passed away, and Cheryl went back home for a season to grieve during that process, and we were able to transition to a complete deaf center, to a new facility. And so when Cheryl came back, the Lord had given us favor, and we had a new facility with a lot of good support systems within the country. So then the national overseer of Honduras asked, would I come and work with the national office? And he says, if I was crazy enough to bring four kids down to Honduras, that...
And you know, were.
that he wanted some crazy guy to work with him.
Yeah.
And so he put me over national projects. Okay. And so we were working with the national office to basically develop trust and inroads within people who had donated and given for projects before, mm-hmm. That might have not been giving in a while. So I started helping develop church plants, educational centers, and helping to make sure funds were reaching their full capacity. Mm-hmm. So then the national overseer realized that we needed a territorial overseer in Honduras, over in the islands and the jungle area of Honduras, Roatan and La Mosquitia. So he started sending me over in his place, because he was serving both roles. Mm-hmm. In that process, he asked me after a month or so of going over if I would be the territorial overseer. So mm-hmm. I took that role. I never wanted to be in leadership. I kind of always ran from those positions, because sometimes people look at those as political positions. Mm-hmm. And I never felt I wanted to be in politics. I just wanted to serve. Mm-hmm. You know, I just wanted to help people. And what I realized that it was easier for me to reach the impact I needed to in the projects in a leadership role. And so, you know, God worked that out, and I became the overseer of La Mosquitia, the jungle, and the islands. I was in that role for about a year when I went to General Assembly, and the Central American overseer asked me would I serve as the national overseer of Belize. For me, I thought, well, you know, are you asking me to move to Belize? And that wasn't the case. He wanted me to be the national overseer of Belize and be the territorial overseer over Honduras. So we took those roles. In the middle of that, a church came open, and as the overseer, I had to fill that church or find somebody to fill that church. It was an English Islander church, and so I didn't have anybody to fill it. So I became the pastor of a local church.
And this meant that you guys moved from San Pedro Sula then into Roatan, correct?
Yes. Okay. We had a whole family life transition, which, you know, that would be the second transition, you know, in like 2 years. Mm-hmm. So it was a unique situation, but, you know, once again, God's hand was in every bit of it. That's when my wife reminded me, about 8 months into that, my wife reminded me, she says, I told you that I would go with you mm-hmm. as long as I was with you. Mm-hmm. And I realized that, you know, just because the people above you think you should do something doesn't always make it what God wants you to do.
Let's unpack that for just a minute, Paul, because in this segment that we're talking about leadership, I think it's very important for people to understand, especially when you have a ministry couple, that God, while one may be preaching, the other one may be supporting, one may be doing some other activity, and the other one may be supporting, or they both could be very active in, you know, ministerial activities. God called the family first.
Yes.
Yeah, talk about how you guys have been able to maintain balance. Now, you've had some challenges, some checks, but you've maintained balance. I mean, you guys are a healthy couple with, you know, good ministry happening. How did you maintain balance in that whenever Kim reminded you that, hey, you know, this is us together? How did you maintain balance in that?
You know, and that's a priority as family. You know, generations past, I heard so many pastors lose their children. You always mm-hmm. talk about, oh, preacher's children are the worst children. And I didn't grow up in a home with a pastor. And so I never experienced that. So I just wanted to make sure that my children, my wife, because when everything else goes away,
sure,
that's who's going to be there to take care of you.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to make sure that we're spending time there. So it took me about 2 months, but I went to my leadership and was very, you know, gracious. They were very kind to me. It was probably a shot in the foot as far as political motivation to move up the chain of leadership. But that is not what, I mean, God's called us to the family.
Sure.
And if it's God's plan for us to be in a different role at some time, then it will be His plan.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no need to sacrifice your family for those mm-hmm. for those kind of positions and power.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the Lord allowed me to transition in Belize to a new leadership. God gave us favor. There were church plants. When we took the country, it was $40,000 in debt, and we were able to leave it with $20,000 in the bank,
good,
a new vehicle,
mm-hmm.
An office remodeled. And so we focused in Honduras. And I focused in on the territory, the pastoral leadership, and took the vision of the local church. And I think that's something to be said. So many pastors go into a congregation and they bring their culture to the congregation
mm-hmm.
rather than looking at where God's brought you to and really adapting you to that culture.
Mm-hmm.
There's a book called Breaking Your Church's Culture Code. It's a dynamic book to help you to speak vision into the culture that you're in.
Mm-hmm.
And so we began to really just hear what God was doing. And I'll tell you, it was hard even pastoring a church that was not our culture. Although they spoke English, the culture was completely different. I think the first year they hated me. The second year I hated them. The third year we actually started liking each other. And the fourth year, man, we made wonderful things happen.
Yeah, and they still love you and you still love them because you go back each year multiple times in the year to
absolutely.
The same place. That's awesome.
So
that's hope to pastors who may be in a struggling point right now, you know, that, hey, do what you know you're supposed to do in your heart, love well, serve well, and let God heal.
Absolutely. Because you don't know what they've been through. A lot of times we look at people and say, what's wrong with you?
Mm-hmm.
And it's not necessarily what's wrong with you, it's what's happened to you.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when we look at people with that compassion, and we help them, because these folks didn't trust American pastors because they'd mm-hmm. had a few of them, And it took me a while for them to understand that I'm for you.
So from this now, so the church grew and the church blossomed or did well. And out of that then, a clinic was birthed and a school was birthed. Is
right.
that correct?
We planted a school, which was a unique thing. The school, we were supposed to start with just 3 grades. We ended up starting with 9 grades the first year. And then the next year, we expanded all the way through high school and kindergarten. This is just 4 years later, and we have over 300 students.
Currently. Okay.
And we started out with 182. Mm-hmm. We have over 300 students currently, and we have a waiting list for every class.
Mm-hmm.
So it's amazing what God has done. And two, we felt comfortable with the leadership that we left in place. They were phenomenal people. I think that's another thing that sometimes we look at foreigners or different cultures as not maybe as capable.
Mm-hmm.
But I found out just because they do things a little different doesn't make them less. They have expounded on the vision. I go as a support system. I help them, you know, with the fact we just received 5 acres donated to expand the school to another level.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just amazing how God put that all together and developed and put together the leadership team for that school. And following the vision of those who had gone on before me who had desired to do something but wasn't able to reach this level.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the clinic, on the other hand, Bob and Sarah Phillips actually mm-hmm. built the clinic. And at the end of building, Bob passed away. Sarah was a little older, and she asked, you know, if the Church of God would take the reins of the clinic. It had never been open as a clinic. So through relational, to me, it's a relational leadership thing.
Mm-hmm.
Through relationships, we were able to reach out to the local congressman. We were able to reach out to other entities that before had been manipulating the process
In Honduras,
okay. And that would not allow us to open the clinic, but being able to reach into those and partnering with some of them, we were able to open the clinic within 8 months. We mm-hmm. had the clinic open full time, and now they, as of last week when I was there, they have seen over 30,000 patients.
Wow.
And many of them are regular, ongoing patients that consider that their doctor, their physician.
Mm-hmm.
And now we have an eye doctor who is there once a month doing cataract surgeries. And so we are known for the specialists that are now coming into our clinic. We have more specialists coming into the clinic than the hospital does.
Mm-hmm.
And so the hospital is now sending patients to us.
This is in Roatan, Honduras.
This is in Roatan, Honduras. Mm-hmm. So it's called Vessels of Mercy Clinic.
Mm-hmm.
And the school is Kingdom Bilingual Educational Center. And they're both Church of God entities,
mm-hmm.
and God is just really continuing to bless.
And at the school now, you can get an international degree. Is that correct?
Yes, every student,
high school diploma, international high school diploma.
Absolutely. So every okay. person who graduates has a certificate from Honduras.
And you both have, back up for just a minute, Paul, and the students that are there, right? So you have U.S. students that may be living there in Honduras, you know, who maybe were born in the U.S. You have Honduran students. You have to tell us about the variety of cultures in the school, because there's multiple cultures, not just one culture in this school.
Well said. In the islands of Honduras, you have what they would consider themselves Black Islanders. You have White Islanders. You have Garifuna, which is an Black Indigenous group. You have the what they call extranjeros, which would be the foreigners who are there, Americans, Canadians, even some from England who are there. And so we do have a wide base of culture within the school, and which brings another level of education, because mm-hmm. we're really impacting. One of the local pastors told me this past week, he said, Pastor, he said, the school has brought a level of ministry that we've needed for so long. He said, you know, we disciple. He said, but the level of discipleship that's going on there is amazing, because these kids are in Bible class. they're learning English and Spanish. When they leave, they're completely fluent in two languages.
So it's a private Christian college.
High school.
Christian high school in Roatan, Honduras. It's a private Christian college in Roatan, Honduras that actually is affordable. So it's basically, depending on your income level, depends on... Is that how that works?
We have some...
Summer scholarships?
We have some scholarships that are available. We're half the price of any prestigious school that's on the island. But this year, we actually, in competition educationally, we won the math award for the whole region.
Wow.
So... So that is what's brought many people to us, because not only do they realize that we are a Christian, you know, a campus, just like Lee, a campus where Christ is King is our motto. So we have a Christian, you know, base. We also have a great education that these people know that they're going to get something that's going to be valuable to them.
Right.
Because the hope of most people in the islands is their ability to speak English, because tourism is now one of the biggest incomes of anybody in the islands. So for them to have that, we're not only fishing, but we're teaching them to fish.
So your greatest leadership lesson learned while you were working in country in Honduras, and now you're working here in the States again. So tell us your greatest leadership lesson learned.
I don't know it all.
That's a great lesson to learn. And we'll be right back to talk about our final segment with this episode. And we're going to talk about service, faith, leadership, and service with Paul Dyer. We'll be right back. All right, we're back for the final segment of this episode with Paul Dyer. We're talking about missions. Paul and Kim Dyer are currently working in Lawrence County, Tennessee. Previously, they spent 8 years with their family, their four kids, in Roatan, Honduras, and San Pedro Sula, in Belize, and multiple places. And so we're going to talk now about this idea of service. So when we just finished up, Paul, you were talking about the school there in Roatan. 300 students now, is growing tremendously, got a waiting list. It's a great educational system. Let's talk about ways that people, college students, now we know that, you know, I work at Lee University, you're an alum of Lee, we have a Lee alum who's now working full time at the school there, students from other schools. Why should an education major consider working abroad? You know, maybe they were born and raised in the United States, but yet they have a pull to go abroad. What does that look like for them, and why should they consider that?
You know, it's a great opportunity to expand your worldview, to be able to teach in a foreign country, because not only are you impacted, but you make a huge impact into the lives of so many other kids. The great thing about being able to come to Kingdom Bilingual is we set our school up on a American time frame. Most schools in Honduras, public schools, start from November. From February to November. We actually run on an American system where we start in August and end in June. So the opportunity is available for teachers to come down, students who graduate and want to serve a year, 2 years in Honduras can come. What we do is we give them an apartment to stay in. We offer them a stipend for their food and things like that. It's not something that's probably going to be able to pay any student loans back, but at the same time, it gives them an opportunity. They're not having to wonder how they're going to live. They'll be taken care of, and they're usually roomed with someone else, so they're safe, and it's a great place. It is a safe place.
Yeah, I've been there, six times now to Roatan, leading students from Lee, and one of the students that's now there teaching or in administration at the school actually went on a trip with me to Honduras a few years ago. Let's talk about service in general. You know, you said something earlier on in this podcast. You talked about your parents traveling and bringing coins to you. And you said that the coins were actually seeds, that somehow that planted a hunger in you to know more than just your community. Let's talk for a minute, because I think that sometimes we think that maybe our need is only, we're the only people facing that difficulty. We're the only people. So how can people who have not yet been exposed to a larger world than where they live realize that the needs in Honduras, while the poverty in some countries may be less or more than other countries, a lot of the needs in your experience in Honduras and in your experience here in the States prior to going and now being back, same need base, because we're all created, you know, regardless of where we are from, we're all created in the image of God, and we all have needs. So kind of paint a picture for us on how to understand that you know, you may be in a situation, but there's a lot of other people in the same situation.
Yeah. You know, it started, my parents were servant people. You know, they're just servant hearts. And so growing up in a home that's always been a service, my dad was a Gideon. He was a Sunday school teacher, served as, a youth leader. They were always, you know, offering themselves in service to ministry. My mom, even after she retired, served at the hospital as a volunteer. And when we started pastoring in Maryville, we started doing homeless ministry over in Knoxville. We brought in different feeding programs. And at one point, we were feeding over 600 families a month. And I realized, you know, that's missional, is recognizing the needs that are around us. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I think too many times we become focused on ourselves too much, that we don't prefer our brother. We don't look around us to see. If people will become obvious to or open to the fact that there are people, it could be the cashier at the grocery store that you're at, or the attendant at the gas station. When we start becoming aware of specific needs, then, you know, you ask God, what is the solution? Too many times we're complaining. Mm-hmm. There's just so many poor, or so many do this, and why do they do that? Well, what's the solution? And I think Jesus offers that greatest solution, and that is to love. Mm-hmm. And the way we love is not just word lip service, it is action, getting involved into the community. Where we are now in Loretta, Tennessee, it's the second poorest county in Tennessee, mm-hmm. and it has a major opioid issue. So our church started a CR, Celebrate Recovery Program. Another solution base was to start Give a Kid a Chance, to be able to impact the kids. And then the door came open to make it a whole faith-based initiative, mm-hmm. where multiple denominations can come together and rally into our community. So since being in Loretto now, I'm actually on the Lawrence County Substance Abuse Coalition. I'm on their board. I serve as a mentor with I Am for Kids, which allows me to go into the school and meet with kids who are struggling. And I think it's just making yourself available, because there are plenty of opportunities around us to serve. But are you available? Are you willing to sacrifice, an hour a week? Mm-hmm. You know, are you willing to sacrifice some time to really give yourself to an initiative to help somebody else? And I think that's the biggest step, is are you available?
Mm-hmm. So you're now moving from, you're getting older, by the way, and your hair is continuing to fall out, by the way, and you're getting more bald than you used to be. So people can't see this. They don't know, but it's true. By the way, the best place to get a haircut that I know is in Honduras, right? And so it is the cheapest and most efficient haircut that I've had. And so it's pretty good stuff. But you're now moving with your, you know, experiences, Paul, with your, you know, own ministry development. You're now a mentor. You're now a pastoral leader in a lot of ways. You know, what do you say to people about this idea of mentoring relationships, where you can't do everything yourself right now, but you have to trust other people and have to help equip other people? You know, what do you say to that pastor who, because I watched you and I saw you from very active, hands-on, being the guy who pretty much everybody has to, you know, has to run by you, not because you were authoritative, but because the way the resources worked, you know, it was necessary, to now having to really understand that you're having to develop others. You're having to help others to be developed. You know, what do you say to pastors who are in that balance between learning to coach and mentor versus being on the front line yourself, you know. And you're on the front line, but at the same time, you're not on the front line all day, every day, because you're having to mentor other people and coach them. How do you move from position A to position B? Does that make sense?
It's a good question, and I'd love to say that I have it down taskfully, you know. Mm-hmm. There's two models of discipleship, and you know, one is Christ's model. And then Paul's model is more of a developmental style. If you look at transformational discipleship, you know, it starts with a model of almost as if it's child development.
Okay.
And I think that at the beginning phases, we have that paternal model like Paul talks about in 1 Thessalonians chapter 2, you know. How he cared, how he was willing to care for them as a mother cares and cherishes her child. And I think that in that beginning stages, we do have to nurse them to that place.
Mm-hmm.
But then as they mature, we become coaches.
Mm-hmm.
And then later we become the cheerleaders who cheer them on as they do, and we mm-hmm. and we work with them. All at the same time, It's a servant model, because you know, I heard someone say today, we serve down and we honor up.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that when we, and I also found that a missionary in Philippines had written a book years ago, and I wish I could remember the name. I apologize, but he said we have to reach up to reach down further.
Mm-hmm.
It's all relationships.
Yep.
And when people learn that they can trust you, and you develop the relationship, you begin to trust others with tasks. You know, I told my son this morning, I said, he forgot his soccer ball. And I said, son, how can I trust you with a phone that you want when I can't trust you to get your soccer ball?
Mm-hmm.
And it's all about learning to develop, mm-hmm. you know, relationship, trusting, building that individual, building people, not building program.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you build people, it all will come together.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a challenge, but mm-hmm. it's an investment. It's not something you just go in and wave the magic wand.
Mm-hmm.
You have to invest your life mm-hmm. into it. You know, Paul said, we invested in you the gospel of God and our lives.
Mm-hmm.
It's a life process. It's a journey. But don't give up on that journey. Don't quit on the journey. Too many pastors that get into a situation and 2 years they're out because they've not allowed themselves to invest.
Mm-hmm.
Invest in it.
One of the things I appreciate most about you, and that is to say I appreciate a lot of things about you, but one of the things I appreciate the most about you, Paul, having known you for this many years, is while you're very loyal and faithful to the congregation and even the denomination, you know, that God has positioned you in for this season in your life, you're very ecumenical. You're very committed to crossing bridges, you know, and going the extra mile, and you know, validating and even valuing other people that are in different organizations, you know, ministry settings than what you are. What has been your success to that? What has been your key to that? Because if you walk down the streets with Paul in Roatan, Honduras, you know, I mean, people are going to call his name. They may not even go to his church. They may have never been to his church, but they're going to call his name. You know, you do the same thing. You know, recently you guys had a terrible tragedy. You probably don't want to talk about it in detail here. You know, in your city, loss of emergency personnel, and you were on the spot right there. What do you account your success? As we get ready to close this episode with you today, what do you count for your success in understanding how to be a bridge builder and not an isolator?
Just as we called the name of the school, we named the school Kingdom Bilingual Educational Center, because I recognize that for the world to know the love of Jesus, they have to see the body unified. And we will not do that by holding position in some theological debate. We'll only do that by embracing the body of Christ. And so I'm not intimidated. I think some people are intimidated, or they're looking more at competition. You can't do that in the body of Christ.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be able to value who people are. And I've always looked at ministers, you know, as brothers and sisters, as the body of Christ, and try to develop relationships with all of them. So even this last year, I mean, even this past week, you know, some would have criticized me because being the overseer of the East Territory of Honduras, every time I go, I'm preaching mostly in Church of God churches. But I had a Baptist pastor who I've connected with, has helped me with a school, mm-hmm. and he asked, would you come and preach at my church? I said, absolutely. Because I want us to be kingdom connected. Mm-hmm. I want us to break down the barriers. I appreciate my denomination. I'm thankful for the Church of God because I feel like they're my accountability. Mm-hmm. They're my covering. And I will be loyal to the Church of God. But at the same time, I also have to recognize that there's a higher calling, mm-hmm. and that is the kingdom calling.
Good.
And I'm not going to leave Church of God to be non-denominational. Mm-hmm. I feel like I can be kingdom-minded mm-hmm. within my denomination and reach other people.
Awesome. Hey, Paul, tell us how, if somebody wants to support the school, if in Honduras they want to support the clinic, they want to support the work you're doing in Loretta, Tennessee, how do people get a hold of you? And if somebody wants to reach out to be supportive of any of these ministries that you talked about, either they want to travel abroad, you know, you probably would benefit a conversation or would appreciate a conversation from, you know, a dentist or a physician or an educator or somebody who says, you know, man, I just need to give a financial gift today. How do they reach out to you and how do they do this?
You can email me at Pastor Dyer, and that's D-Y-A-R, at gmail.com, or you can call me at 931-300-3566, and I will point you in the right direction. I'll get you in contact with the right entity to make sure that your funds go and meet the specific need. If you'd like to be a teacher, we would love to have you. If you'd like to go on a missional vacation as a doctor, you can come serve 3 or 4 days at the clinic and then spend 2 or 3 days snorkeling or in diving or whatever like that. We can work all those situations out. We'd love to have teams to come do children's ministry. There's plenty of opportunity.
Mm-hmm. Pastor Paul, I'm going to ask you in just a moment to pray, and I want you to pray. Now, Paul is fluent in English. He's fluent in sign language, and he's fluent in Spanish. And I want you to pray in Spanish today as we get ready to close this episode. You know, whatever God impresses on your heart, we know that we have listeners from 48 states, I think, and now 10 or 12 countries. We don't really know who listens, but we know that people are listening. And so we want to be the voice of encouragement to them today that might, you know, and help them to understand that God does really care about them. At the conclusion of Pastor Paul's prayer, stay with us, and as we do always, you'll have a Lee Yu worship tune that you'll be able to listen to and reflect on this conversation as God speaks to your heart and helps you to find the footprints in which he's laid for you. Thank you for joining us on Servcast, and until next time, remember, you're made for more. Pastor Paul, will you pray a blessing today over those here?
Padre, te doy gracias por la oportunidad de estar con esta gente que está escuchando. Y Dios, queremos bendecirte. Queremos ser bendecidos. Y queremos bendecir lo que más. Y Dios, ayúdanos en este día para ser siervos. Entiendo que ustedes vienen a servir, no a ser servido. Y Dios, ayúdanos para también ser líderes. Un líder que tiene el modelo de Jesús. Y Dios, gracias por la oportunidad de ser un ministro del Evangelio. En el nombre de Jesús, danos la habilidad de misericordia y la gracia para ser usado en tu ministro, en tu ministerio. Y danos la paz en lo que, no importa lo que estamos dentro, donde ponemos, danos la paz para seguir en tu ministerio. Nos dijo eso en el nombre de Jesús. Amén.
you have called a desire to live a life of truth. We are sons and daughters, so we give everything to you.
Glory fall like rain. guys so much for joining us on Servcast. Be sure to rate and review us on iTunes and share us on Facebook. Hey, if you've got any questions, send them to servcast22@gmail.com. Thank you guys for tuning in. We'll see you next time on Servcast.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Servcast. The thoughts and opinions expressed on Servcast are those of William Lamb, his guest, and no one else. Until next time, this is Servcast, signing off from Studio 22.